8 weeks is only 8 weeks with the surgery and the recovery and, you know, just following what they said to do. It may seem like the scariest thing on the planet, but considering the alternative to the recipient, that's even scarier.
Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of the Ajmera Transplant Center at Toronto General Hospital, Canada's largest and most comprehensive transplant program, performing over 700 transplants annually. I'm your host, Candace. Each episode, we share the powerful stories from transplant recipients and living donors, along with insights and education from leading medical professionals. On today's episode of Living Transplant, we're sharing a story that begins with a simple question, but comes from a place of deep love. When Megan's stepmom jokingly said, "Hey, can I have some of your liver?" during the early days of COVID-19 over FaceTime, Megan didn't hesitate. For her, it came down to one thing. She just wanted her mom and stepmom to be happy, healthy, and be able to continue living their lives together. What followed was her journey into living liver donation, grounded in a powerful belief. 8 weeks of her life could mean a lifetime for someone else. In this episode, Megan shares her experience navigating donation during a global pandemic, the realities of recovery, and how she's come to see her scar as a true badge of honor. Please enjoy. Hello, Megan. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's our true pleasure.
Hello. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to jump right in?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. So I have seen a beautiful recording from you in the past about your journey as a living donor, and you've said that it wasn't even a question when deciding to donate. Can you take us back to that moment when you decided to donate and see if you could be a match, and really what was going through your mind at that time?
Well, really, it was a very trying time, actually. It was right at the beginning of COVID. It was the second week of March. Everybody had just been locked at home. My mom's called me to find out if I was okay, right? Because everybody had lost their jobs. Just having a conversation with them, and my stepmom in the background, just on a jest, after I was told she was put on the transplant list, I just hear a yell from the background of, "Hey, can I have some of your liver?" And as a joke, it was like, "Yeah, sure, not a problem. Don't worry about it. I got you." Mm-hmm. And then I hung up the phone and went, "Well, why not?"
Right.
What, like, why not? And so I ended up calling them back and being like, "Well, why not? Like, give me the paperwork. Mm-hmm. What's this all about?" So I started doing some research about it and found out that it's like an 8 week recovery time. There's nothing really that I end up, nothing really changes in my life except for a recovery period. And I just went through the paperwork and step one to step in the hospital.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. It wasn't even a thought. It was just like, yeah, why not? Like,
yeah. Someone who I love is in need and I can maybe do this. How do I do it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. And you said to, you know, 8 weeks of your life for someone else's lifetime. That's a huge thought, right? That recovery is 8 weeks. How did you come to see it that way? Like, very lighthearted, and, you know, if this is something I want to do, 8 weeks doesn't mean that much in the grand scheme of my life, but it means everything to my mom.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, if you think about your life, like, it goes by so fast. Like, 8 weeks, like, Christmas was more than 8 weeks ago, and it feels like it was just last week, you know what I mean? Like, it especially in your adult life, time passes so quickly and things can change so fast that 8 weeks is really just a drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, speaking about your relationship with your stepmom and, you know, how casual you guys were with that conversation. Like, yeah, of course I'll give you a part of my liver. And, you know, even the way that she broached it, you know, you guys obviously have a very, you know, open and beautiful relationship. How would you describe your bond before the transplant, and has it changed at all since?
The bond beforehand, so I've always been super close with my mother. Like, I was raised by my mother. Yes, I have siblings, but I was raised almost like an only child because my brother had moved out very, very early. He is an older brother. So my mom and I have always had a super close bond. And then when mom's been through some stuff, and then she found somebody that made her happy. Right. So my stepmom, so Paula came into the picture and just made my mom whole. Right. So they became my moms and they're one and the same to me. Right. So I love Paula just as much as I love my mom. And I feel like it's just strengthened the bond afterwards. As my brother would say, he lost the favorite child moniker. I've now got it.
Yes.
But every time I see Paula, I ask her, you know, how's my liver doing? She's doing very well.
Amazing. And how long has it been since all of that happened?
So that would be like 5.5 years, because it was, the surgery took place on November 2nd of 2020.
Beautiful. Yeah. So really, like you said, like all of this going on in the world with COVID, uncertainties, and then throwing into that, you know, living with liver disease and a failing organ. I mean, how your moms must have felt going through that. That must have been really isolating and scary for you guys too, to think, you know, what is going to happen to her in the midst of all of what else is going on right now too.
It was a very trying time. We, as everybody did, we got very accustomed to using FaceTime and Zoom and having these conversations like we're having right now over video. But there was a lot of times that my stepmom would be in the hospital and my mom would have to travel into Toronto, and just doing that it was difficult on them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just being there to be able to have conversations with them, not in person, but as in person as we possibly could be, keeping them up to date on all the testing I was going through. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, did that change your testing as well, or any fears that you had around that? Because I mean, I know that there's fears for some donors to go through the process, but then adding a layer of, you know, a world event like COVID on top of it, you know, that's a lot of uncertainty to walk into.
It really is. Having to, not only that, it's having to travel to Toronto, to the bigger cities, and go into hospitals, right? That, I wouldn't say got worrying, but as long as, you know, I had my, when the vaccines came out, I can't remember if they came out at the same time, but when all that, I just followed the steps that we were instructed. And, you know, I made sure I isolated myself just a little bit more, masked up a little bit more, just because I knew if anything happened to me, that would possibly damage the process. Right. So it's just being a little more cautious, a little more careful.
Right. Yeah. And you also talked about your mom's happiness. You know, you've talked about it a couple times, about it really being, you know, core to a lot of, you know, this journey and your life as well. And, you know, even talking about it now, you're smiling for those who aren't seeing you. You know, how did the relationship with her as well, I guess, you know, catapult you into this? And there's a lot of donors who say, I'm just going to do it. I have no questions. I want in. And it sounds like you were one of those as well. I'm going to do a little bit of research, but I want to jump in. You know, how did your mom, you know, being a caregiver to your stepmom and going through all of this, you know, how did that impact her and, you know, you trying to, you know, also help from however way you could?
I do know that it was rough. It was, obviously it's not easy. My biological mom as well was she was already recovered at this time, but she was almost like a reciprocal because she had gone through cancer treatment not a year before.
Oh my goodness.
Right. So she had breast cancer and went through the chemo and the radiation and all the things that she had to do. And Paula took care of her. And then when Paula's health a year later took a downturn, my mom turned around and did the same thing. Again, like I would support them 100%. I do know there was a cottage trip right in the middle of the summer in between the two illnesses that mom was just finishing up her treatments, and Paula was starting to take a bit of a downturn. And then my brother wasn't actually overly well either. So I was kind of taking care of everybody, making sure everybody was sitting down, carrying everything. So it's just, I know it was hard on them, and it's one of those things where I will do anything that I can. I'm a giver. I like to take care of people. I like to, you know, I'll give them shirt off my back if I can, if somebody is in need, right, to support them. And it is difficult being so far away, 2.5 hours away from them. But you do what you can, and this was the best thing I could do.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. So,
One of the biggest challenges that I did find through all the testing, it wasn't as much supporting them because they had a good support system, but the doctors actually had asked me to lose a bunch of weight.
Oh, wow.
Which is something you don't think about when you say, I want to be a live donor.
Right.
Right. Is they came in with my BMI and said they wanted my BMI to a certain point. So we discussed things. I was also more muscly, being somewhat of an athlete at the time. So we went in, and I actually ended up losing probably about 65-70 pounds in like 6 weeks. Just dropped it. And that's the extent that I will go to help, like, especially if it's to save someone's life.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. And I'm wondering, you know, right before we started, we were chatting a little bit about roller derby and your passion for that. Do you think that, you know, that drive kind of helped you through this process as well? Like, roller derby is not an easy sport to participate in. It's not like, not to knock it, but it's not like slow pitch where, you know, I go up and I do my thing and then I can sit for a long time, right? Like, that is a very intense sport. Do you think kind of, you know, that sport, did you ever see the donation process almost like that as well? That, you know, I'm going to really narrow my focus and really get into this.
Roller derby is definitely not it's an intense sport. It's full contact sport on roller skates.
Crazy.
That's all you have to say. I'm very much a competitive person.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm competitive to myself or competitive to the other team or competitive to my teammates. And your brain kind of sticks it in almost like a challenge, like a goal. And then you start competing against yourself. And that's how my brain kind of went into it. So to get to the final, to get to the end, to get to the winning stage was the surgery.
Right. Amazing. And so once you got through those tests, you get the call or you get the email or you're talking to the hepatologist and they say, guess what? You are a match. And if you would like, we're going to proceed with the surgery. How did that feel?
Actually, that felt amazing. Honestly, it was like getting your final report card and getting all A's,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it definitely was, finally had a date, like a set solid date. Like, you had passed all the tests, you're down to the right weights, everything is set in place. Paula is still healthy enough to still do it. Right, because we had to keep watching her and her levels and her health wise. And yeah, and when they came back and said, okay, it's happening on November 2nd, it was great. And I could still have Halloween.
Right. Yes. Hey, silver lining, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find, you know, for a lot of families, that in between like diagnosis and transplant, that wait is often the hardest part, right? There's so much uncertainty in that time period. How did you guys manage to stay positive or, you know, keep going forward during that wait time?
I feel like communication is the key on that one. Mm. So communication between the doctors and all the people that I'm talking to, all the support workers that I talk to, and then taking that communication and communicating that to my mom, so they are completely aware of everything going on as well. I believe that having that open communication is kind of gives you the relief of at least a little less of an unknown. Just recently, about a year ago, I actually had one of my best friends, her father's liver failed. Like, he was in the hospital, wow. His liver was failing. Almost the same thing as Paula. And she immediately jumped on this, like called me up and said, like, I just found out I can donate part of my liver, blah, blah, blah. And then I told her, I hadn't even told her, she didn't even know I had done this, right? And I had told her, she lost her mind. So I had this same conversation with her. And honestly, just that waiting period, just to see whether he was going to get onto the transplant list, I saw all those stresses that I went through. Mm-hmm. And had this exact same, just keep in constant communication with those doctors, keep in constant communication with, you know, your father and all this stuff. It turned out that he recovered and didn't need the transplant, but she was just, with hearing my story, she was ready to just drop the ball right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I think there's a lot of people like that, right? Trying to navigate the unknown and thinking, you know, what can I have control over? Right. I can have control over, you know, seeing if I can be a match for this person, or attending the doctor appointments with my family member, or, you know, like you said, communicating with the staff to know what's happening. And I think that's huge. You know, we feel so lost when we go through something like this. It's hard because we don't have control over anything. Right.
Yeah.
So having somebody to talk to is huge, who's been through that. I'm sure she really appreciated getting to have your support and feedback and expertise and going through all of that yourself with your family, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I kind of wish I did have somebody I could talk to at the time. I know there was probably support groups out there, but nobody that I knew personally, right? I did a lot of my research just online, just finding out the different things. But to have that support network would make it so much easier, a little more better on the brain.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. A little bit lighter, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, thinking about your family, you've just gone through all of this, then you get to the surgery, you wake up, you're both, you know, doing well. How was that recovery for you and for Paula?
So the immediate recovery after was kind of interesting. As you know, especially with COVID, you could only have one person, right? Like, it's changed now. You probably could have more family members or friends and family and stuff, but you could only have one person, and that one person couldn't change. So my one person was my brother, but during the week, so as soon as the surgery was done, he had to leave. Luckily, though, Paula's one person was my mother.
Right.
So she was already in the hospital, and she was able to come over to me and go back and forth. And then the nurses all kind of got to know us, and it was really amazing, this nurse support staff, because they ended up being able to put her on the same floor as me.
Mm.
So I was able to, when I was able to, get up and go for a walk and go visit Paula.
Oh, wow.
And then have a sit with her and, you know, have a coffee or whatever, and then come walk and go back to my room. And so, yeah, the hospital support staff was fantastic and made a big difference. And being able to have my mom come see me as well as Paula was great.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because you don't want to have to do that on your own during that recovery phase, right?
No, it was difficult. you do have to spend like the seven, they say 7 days. I think I was there for six, mm-hmm. Because it just happened over a weekend and I was able to go. But yeah, to be in a hospital for 7 days, that's mm-hmm. rough.
Yeah.
And to be able to have your mom there to bring you good food.
Right. Yes. Perks, right? Perks that you might not get at home because they live so far, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Amazing. And then how soon after the surgery do you think you saw a difference in Paula?
That is a hard one to answer just because mm-hmm. time just blurred.
For sure.
So after I left the hospital, I think she was in the hospital. I honestly don't remember how much longer she was in the hospital for. I went home after a week and I would get daily calls from my mom to check up on me here during my recovery here. But, you know, I would say I think the next time I physically saw her was Christmas, and she definitely looked better by then. Oh, and I was, that would only be like a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But she, every day she was like that little bit better. It was just that slow step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember with my transplant similarly, right? Like it's, you're still going through the motions of, you know, all of the new medications, and you just had a major surgery. So you have that big incision to heal from too, and learning, you know, how to deal with that new life. But a lot of recipients that I talk to, yeah, they say every day is a little bit better until you kind of hit this magic number. It's different for every patient where you wake up and you go, oh, I feel really good today. This might be my new normal. And then it is. And, you know, you get to live on and do all of these amazing things that you weren't sure you were going to be able to do prior to that, right? Because of our donors.
Yeah, like it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned you saw her at Christmas. Was that Christmas any different than the previous one?
I feel like there was just a lot of unspoken love. Like unspoken connection.
Oh.
Right? Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Gratitude and love and all being together.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just that being able to be together and like for unforeseen how many more.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And, you know, you've seen now both of your moms go through a road to recovery. As a daughter, what is it like to see those two people go from, you know, places in your life that you didn't know if they would see tomorrow to now having this beautiful future in front of them?
It's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. I have a hard time thinking about my mom's, like it's going to happen. It's eventual. All parents go.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very hard time thinking about that.
For sure.
So it's just a matter of, you know, trying to do everything I can to get them to a place where they can just continue enjoying their lives, mm-hmm. To be happy. It's unfortunate now that actually Paula is now a caregiver to my mother again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I talk to them every so often, every couple of weeks we call in FaceTime and have coffee together all I want them to be is happy and healthy and living their best life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. And getting to be able to be part of that, like you got to be part of making that happen, right?
And to be completely honest, I even said this the other day. I'm like, if there was something I could give of myself to make my mother now better, mm-hmm. to cure her cancer, like to here have a couple of spine things that yours are bad, I would just here take a couple of mine. You know,
right.
I would do it, but yeah. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, we often hear, you know, from parents who will say, like I would literally take myself apart to give whatever my child needs to survive. And, you know, hearing that same thing, vice versa, right? Like we want our family members to be healthy and to continue to just, like you said, just be happy and you know, do what they wish and laugh and, you know, be together. Yeah. But you were able to do that, right? You were able to literally say, here's a part of my organ. Take it.
Exactly. And again, as I said, like it's not that much out of your life. Even to be able to donate to a friend, a family, mm-hmm. even a stranger, like it's somebody that you will be connected with the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take that much time out of your life.
Right. Yeah. 8 weeks.
8 weeks.
Plus, minus, 8 weeks. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like mm-hmm. I say the 8 weeks because that's what I ended up getting coverage, mm-hmm. right? So I was financially stable for 8 weeks because they said 8 weeks, mm-hmm. right? So that's what was approved and registered. And to be honest, after about six, I was pretty much back to normal.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. And you have a liver transplant scar. What does that scar mean to you?
For the longest time, like for the first few years, I was very apprehensive about the scar. Yes, I hold it high, like the, you know, life came out of this scar.
Yeah.
Right. But it wasn't very visually appealing, right? Also, as I said, I had lost a lot of weight. So not only did I have the scar, there's a lot of extra tissue that makes it look funny. And I was very self-conscious about it. And then, I don't know, as I get older, I just started losing all cares. And now it's a badge of honor. I'm actually starting to think about and talk to some tattoo artists.
Oh, wow.
Because just as, you know, the mastectomy scars, people will get the tattoos that are meaningful and stuff over top of those scars. This is what I want to do with this one.
Amazing.
So something that represents me, something that represents Paula, and something that represents my mother, kind of integrated within that scar.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be beautiful.
Yeah.
Very neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have no problems with it anymore.
Good.
I don't have a bikini, not a problem.
Yes. Yeah. Wear it with pride because it is a badge of honor. Not everybody gets to have one of those, right?
Yep. Yep. And I get people asking about it all the time.
Amazing.
Right. A lot of children when you go to public schools.
Yes.
Or public pools, you know.
Yes.
And I inform them about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's incredible how little care kids have. Like there's no filter, right? They'll just kind of point at something and go, what's that? What is this? You know, out of like pure curiosity and, you know, zest for life. And I have a 5-year-old and she'll do that often. Like I always say that I'm kind of like a connect the dots for scars because I have dialysis scars and gallbladder and kidney transplant and all of these things. And so when I wear a bathing suit, she'll often go, oh, but what's that one, mama? What's that one, right? Like poking at all of them saying, what's that? What's that? And so, you know, all of the battle scars that I have, it's like, well, mama was brave and I did this piece. And then this is where Gaga, she calls my mom, her Gaga, her grandma, this is where Gaga gave mommy the kidney and that's where it lives now. And, you know, they are just so fascinated that that can happen too, right?
They're just sponges for information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if I didn't have that kind of information to give to my kids, but whenever they would ask questions, I'd be the same way. Mm-hmm. And I don't sugarcoat it. I never did.
Yeah.
Just, here's the information. If I don't know it, let's sit down on the computer. Let's learn.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Incredible way to be. I wish all of us had that, kept that zest or that, you know, curiosity of just learning more always. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Amazing. Yep. So, you know, thinking about your journey, you personally, just as a standalone person, about what you've done, you know, what you're moving towards. We talked a little bit about school as well. For your future, what are you most excited about?
That is such a big loaded question.
It
and
is.
It's funny to say that at the age that I'm at, because I've had to reboot my life quite a few times and I just feel like it's just like another chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel, especially like right now, like even since 2020, everything mm-hmm. was, that's when I went back to school, right? So that was like the prologue to this last chapter. And now I feel like 2026 is the very beginning of my next chapter. I've just recently graduated with a bachelor degree, and I'm looking to do some big things that, you know, are good for me, but also for everybody else. I don't know what those are.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of finding them, and the universe will bring them to me.
That's so exciting to, you know, have this door open and not know what's on, what's going to be on the other side, right? Starting a new chapter.
It's scary, but it's also exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. And for somebody who's listening to the podcast today, maybe they are considering living donation, either for somebody they know or even a stranger, but might be afraid or unsure about some things. What advice would you give to them?
I'm going to repeat what I said. 8 weeks is only 8 weeks, right? That our health system is, and our doctors and our, the talent in this country is so talented, that I did not feel, any trepidation, with the surgery and the recovery and, you know, just following what they said to do, trusting, that it may seem like the scariest thing on the planet,
mm-hmm.
but considering the alternative to the to the recipient, that's even scarier.
Yeah. And then for yourself, you know, not as your donor hat, but putting on your daughter and your caregiver hat, if somebody is facing this as well, and, you know, their loved ones are going through something like this, and they're caring for and supporting somebody who's waiting, do you have any thoughts or advice to give to them as well? And the only reason I ask is because I feel like, and I might be wrong, but chatting with you, I feel like the donor journey felt very straightforward. I'm going to apply, I'm going to get through these steps, and hopefully we can get to the end. Whereas it feels like with this journey for most people as a caregiver, there's a lot less control that we can have in that situation. There's sometimes we don't know what the person wants or what the person needs as a caregiver or how to really do that, right? How to be somebody's advocate or support without stepping on their toes or making them feel, you know, like they're less than or need this kind of support. And I think that's often a really hard place for people to sit as caregivers is, you know, how do I support my loved one and make sure that they feel comfortable and loved and supported without them feeling smothered or like I'm talking down to them or providing pity instead of empathy and love in that sense.
Yeah. So I would say because I didn't get to actually be all that hands-on support to my mother's, being that it was COVID and I was so far away. So having that communication, being able to support them in those ways. I'm going to go back to when I was talking about my best friend and I was trying to support her father, because she was in the hospital every day with him. And she was falling into those same things that you were saying. You know, he wasn't making those choices, and so she had to step up and try to make the good choices and try to advocate for him with the doctors to try to get him the best medical support that he could possibly have, whether it was just medication or whether it was getting on the transplant list. But being there and trying to take that step back and trying not to have a bias, even though you are biased because you are a loved one and that person, you know, is part of your heart. But trying to think unbiased and to be an advocate for them.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah. Is there anything that I did not ask you or didn't bring up that you would like to share with our listeners?
No, I think we like talked about pretty much everything. That's pretty much my story from top to bottom. Yeah, it's being a donor, like just being that living donor. Again, it's given me that badge of honor, which I hold on the belly. It's given me the confidence and experience, funny with the medical system. Like I just went through another surgery less than 6 months ago, so I ended up advocating for myself, and finally, after years and years,
Right.
had my hysterectomy, which I've been struggling to get for a while. But
Yeah.
having the major surgery had already set me up for what was going to happen with that. And it was a very
Right.
similar situation,
Yeah.
and similar healing patterns, and similar. So it's having the trust in the medical system, advocating for yourself or your loved one. I feel like I keep wanting to say, and yeah, it's just 8 weeks. I feel like if I'm going to write a book, I'm going to call it "It's Just 8 Weeks."
You should. And I think that will be the title of this podcast episode as well, right? Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, incredible. Well, thank you for sharing your story and for, you know, joining us and also, you know, talking so openly and lovingly about your mums and the incredible journey that they continue to go on, and what a joy to get to hear your story and the passion that you have behind it. So thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And now I need to go and hug my mummies.
Yes, you do. Yes, and send them virtually one from me as well. Yes.
I will absolutely.
And thank them for making such a wonderful daughter. Yes.
I
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Living Transplant Podcast. If you did, please rate, leave us a review, and share with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Living Transplant wherever you're listening today. If you have any ideas for podcast episodes, please reach out to us at livingorgandonation@uhn.ca. For information about living organ donation, you can visit us at www.livingorgandonation.ca. Special thanks to Bespoke Productions for editing this episode and for production support. I'm your host, Candace Coughlin. Thanks for spending your time with us.